This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas.
When you think of America's great constitutional originators, names like Jefferson, Washington, and Franklin come to mind. And of course, Abbott. Last January, Texas Governor Greg Abbott revealed that he has penned 9 new amendments to the U.S. Constitution. Abbott is proposing a bill of sale, effectively transferring our national government from the people to the plutocrats. His tweaks would outlaw government actions that restrain corporate abuse of workers and consumers, while also preventing future Congresses from meeting crucial public needs such as health care, voter rights, and restoration of our national infrastructure. However, Abbott is not the force behind this tampering with our Constitution. The American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, at the direction of the Koch brothers and their corporate cohorts, wrote Abbott's bill of sale. Back in 2010, ALEC's board of directors approved a resolution calling for a constitutional convention to enact the corporate humbuggery Abbott is now pushing. Convening this convention is a dream of those seeking an American Kochistan, and ALEC is spearheading a hodgepodge of right-wing groups that are close to succeeding. At the convention, they would attempt to rewrite our nation's fundamental governing document. The changes would enthrone the moneyed corporations that Jefferson and other founders abhorred as destroyers of America's democratic possibilities. It takes 34 states to convene a constitutional convention, and 28 states have already passed resolutions to do exactly that. The ALEC Koch Consortium is now targeting 11 others. This is Jim Hightower saying, absurd? Of course. Even the former head of the right-wing Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly, calls this push, quote, a prescription for political chaos. To keep up with ALEC, go to alecexposed.org.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Good afternoon. This is, or good evening it is. This is Paul Kelly. I'm your host on today's Speak Up Arkansas show. This is a place to learn about and share the experiences of people impacted by the policies and practice and programs enacted by your elected officials and implemented by public officials, as and whether they have a positive or negative effect on your life is what we want to be talking about. And it is time to start holding our political leaders accountable for what they are doing to and for all those who are often overlooked by the broader community. In the 2017 session now underway, there is going to be a lot going on that will need your attention, and we hope that you help you. We hope to help you understand and to take action to help promote the common good for all Arkansans. Today's show is help themselves. A discussion about what happens to the thousands of men and women who are released from the Department of Correction in Arkansas each year. And we have guests who know about it, who have experienced it, and who have information to share not only on a personal basis, but also the programs and solutions that might be made available to people who are coming out of the state's prison. I have several folks in the studio, and we're going to, I'd like the three of you with the mics in front of you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your name and who you're with and what's your role on today's show, perhaps.
My name is Linda Gilbert, and I'm a former inmate of the Arkansas Department of Corrections.
All right.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert Combs, and I'm with the Central Arkansas Reentry Coalition as the chairman of the Policy and Law Subcommittee. I spent 5 years in federal prison.
Hello, I'm Jacqueline King. I was incarcerated for 9 months.
All right. We're going to start with, as we always do, is to try to have an update about what may be going on in the legislature now. maybe not even bills filed yet, but some information about what legislative issues may have an impact on this population.
Well, very good. Prior to the convention of the Assembly, the 91st General Assembly, there were 200 bills filed. And since noon yesterday, there have been another 156 bills filed. I expect about 2,000 to 3,000 additional over the next 2 months. There are some that affect criminal justice in general, some that affect reentry in specific cases, and one in particular that I'd like to talk about that's going to be an overarching bill. Some of those that affect reentry in particular, two that I've pulled, and you know me, I'm all about sex offender law. And one is to force people who are removed of the obligation to register as sex offenders to go back on the sex offender registry for life if they've been convicted of certain crimes. So they've served their time, they've done everything required of them by the state, they've gotten off the registry, now they'll have to be put back on the registry for life. And that's one that was sponsored by Jeremy Hutchison, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, who's done some really good work. This bill will be in opposition to. Another one is an unusual one that requires people who are level threes and fours in the sex offender registry, if they attend a school function for one of their children, and it's a paid function where you have to buy a ticket to the event, they have to hire a bodyguard, a police officer, in order to go to that school event, the football game or the concert or whatever it is. They have to pay out of their pocket to be accompanied by a law enforcement officer during this event. That's really an unusual requirement. I've talked to the local law enforcement, and they said they would feel uncomfortable being the employee of a sex offender in this thing. In fact, they find it often it's against law enforcement policy to be hired by an individual to be a bodyguard. So there's some issues there that may crop up. One interesting bill, a bill that's going to be heard on Wednesday next week by the Senate Judiciary Committee, is the bill that's the omnibus bill filed by Senator Jeremy Hutchison. It's called an act to be known as the Criminal Justice Efficiency and Safety Act of 2017. And it's the result of 18 months of joint task force of the Senate and the Senate and the House Judiciary Committees to come up with ways to reduce recidivism, reduce prison populations, and create efficiencies in the Department of Justice, or not the Department of Justice, but the Bureau of Prisons and the ADC and ACC. And it's got some really good stuff in it. It's got some kind of challenging stuff in it. I read it for the first time last night. It's 46 pages long. It's extremely confusing because it refers to all aspects of the statutes. But overall, it may make things a little bit better. It'll open up ACC for greater opportunities, get people out of custody faster, and it'll provide better, it could, if it works out well, provide better management for people in Arkansas Community Corrections and allow them to be free of requirements to be supervised more quickly. All right. That could be a really good solution to reduce costs and to reduce prison overcrowding.
All right. Sounds like somebody needs to write a summary of a 42-page bill to get down to the basics, but
we'll
rely on you on that.
It covers everything from increasing the staff of Arkansas Community Corrections, giving them a smaller caseload by providing more parole and probation officers, to creating mental health and behavioral health task forces to help people avoid prison if they have mental health or behavioral health issues that can be best handled by a healthcare community.
All right. Well, thank you for that update, and we'll stay in touch with what's going on with that.
So thank you very much
for being with us.
All right.
All right. And we're going to now joining us is Dale Sharp. And Dale, you want to talk about your role here and what you're focused on? I know you're a volunteer and a family member, but go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay, my name is Dale Sharp. I'm the father of a daughter who was incarcerated in 2003. She spent 12 years in the Arkansas Department of Correction. When this crime occurred, we were devastated, my wife and I, and we knew of no resources whatsoever to help us. So we stumbled along trying to do the best we could. We did have the recovery community that was helping us. Other than that, we were in it alone. What we did know is we needed to stay in touch with our daughter. So we visited her on a weekly basis. And what would happen in those visits, we began to learn of the issues of the women that were incarcerated, not only during the incarceration, but prior to the incarceration. One of the primary things we learned is, and this came recently out of ADC statistics, about 85% of the people in prison have a previous drug and or alcohol problem. We also learned of the mental health issues that people suffered before they went to prison, many of which caused them to get into substance abuse, and that leads to other crimes. So we moved along through this process, learning as we went. And what I've been able to do in the meantime is take that education, learn from our daughter in prison, and apply it to people getting out of prison, because I began to work with some people getting out of prison, both men and women, and learning more today, working with the ladies at the Phoenix Recovery Center, I knew the problems were immense. They're even bigger than I thought. Just a few of the things I'm able to do is help them get IDs. Most of the people getting out of prison still do not come out with IDs. That is getting better, and there is an effort underway. Getting Social Security cards, transportation to do those things is a major issue. Even though we have a bus system in the city of Little Rock, transportation to and from the bus, the time commitment to get to jobs, from jobs, etc. So the need is great, the need for support, the need for individual one-on-one support, even while incarcerated. Many of the ladies in prison get no mail, get no visits whatsoever. So some solutions you're going to hear more about, if you could just write to some of the ladies and encourage them, and then when they get out, just be there and love them. Because most of the people in prison feel like they've never had love, and that's what we try to give these people. We have a couple of ladies here that I've worked with, and they're going to be able to tell you from their past exactly what they've suffered through and what kind of support they need. So thank you for your attention, and we hope some of you out there are willing to lend a hand.
Linda, would you, something you'd like to say? I think the audience needs to get a sense of what it's like. I know we're going to focus on reentry, but reentry actually starts, you need to start thinking about that when you go in. So just talk about some of the policies or things or even and some of your personal experiences.
Yes. Being in the Arkansas Department of Corrections, I was in there 20 months, and they don't really give you much to go on while you're in there. You just have a lot of time to think, a lot of time to try to figure out what you're going to do when you get out. Of course, everybody when they're in there always is thinking about what they're going to do when they get out, what's going to happen when I get out. Then when you get out, it's not quite so easy. They give you $40 to maybe $100 to get out on a bus ticket, and then you go. And you have to figure it out for yourself. They don't give you much help while you're in there. So when you get out, here you are on this bus, and hopefully your family's picking you up. If not, then you're probably going to a halfway house if you get accepted. There's not many halfway houses. I mean, there wasn't where I'm from, up in Northwest Arkansas. So I paroled out to one in Little Rock. That was the closest one I could come to. And I got accepted there. I'm very grateful for that, by the way. And thank heavens for that, because like I said, they don't give you much support while you're in prison. They don't give you much of anything to go on. So I got to this halfway house called Phoenix Recovery Center for Women. I absolutely love it there. We have a great staff. We have really great support groups. We're taken to, we have inside meetings, 12-step recovery groups. We have outside meetings we're taken to. I've met some really great friends. We have wonderful staff, people who have been there, been through it. They're in recovery also. And you know, really great Christian ladies. I'm also a member of a church. We have a little Bible study. The lady comes in and she does a Bible study for us. So this has been a life-changing for me, life-changing, because it's just really, really difficult out there. The structure is so tight when you're in prison that when you get out, it's like a culture shock. You know, it's a culture shock when you get there. It's a culture shock when you get out. So I would highly recommend, you know, some strong support, church, family, 12-step recovery, and just stay real close to your recovery. Put that number one, you know. Of course, the Lord, you know, that's always number one, but thank you.
Okay. Loretta.
Jacqueline,
I'm sorry. What about yourself?
Yes, when I was incarcerated, I had lost everything. I didn't have anything going in. And for the longest time, I was worried about where I was going, because in there's no resources to where I just happened to hear about Phoenix and wrote, there need to be more places that women like me want to get out and stay clean and get their life back to go to. There need to be more resources.
There are, again, thousands of people coming out, and I know you're talking about your experience, but what is, you know, are the things that they are having to deal with, many of them, without support? And what has to happen before they come out? What kind of things can be done by family and friends before they are released from prison to help them keep from being rearrested because they violated there may be some outstanding warrants and those kinds of things? What are some of the things that happen to other folks who really don't have access, perhaps, as you said, to a halfway house?
I would say mostly just be real supportive. You could always check with your local churches. Hopefully, maybe, you know, if you're a member of a church, look for support in church. Look for some 12-step recovery programs real close to your area if they're coming home. You know, just send them a lot of love. And like Adele was saying, write them while they're in there. You know, just show them that they're not forgotten, because a lot of people are forgotten while they're in there. I also would recommend that we share about help other people. Just try to help others. Yeah. So with that, I'll pass.
Linda, I have a question specifically for you. I believe you were incarcerated.
Hang on a second. We have a caller, and I'll try to get them on the air. Hang on just a second. Hello, you're on the air. Do you have a question?
Yes, my question is, I wonder what things have been done to support the families of those who have been incarcerated or who are currently incarcerated.
All right. Very good question. Thank you for asking that. Anybody want, Dale, you want to respond?
Yeah, there is.
Thank you, ma'am.
There's an organization called I Too Have a Dream that's just in the session. And one of its primary things that this organization is doing is providing support for the families. There have been a couple of meetings. I think the next meeting is January the 24th at 6 o'clock. At Willie Hinton Center. And if you have someone incarcerated or someone you know in your family, come to that meeting with questions, and there will be people there. I will be there, for example, and I can share my experience, strength, and hope with you in what we went through and some things that you might be able to do for the person that you're talking about.
Anybody else want to?
We also have a support group called HOPE, H-O-P-E, Helping Our People Excel. It's a support group for families and people who have been incarcerated. We meet every Thursday from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. And it's just a really great group. It just brings, there have been people show up there who have been incarcerated and maybe bring their mother, father, or both. And there's, most of us all have numbers, have ADC numbers, and we sit around and we try to, we discuss what resources there are out there. What's going on? How do we face different problems that we all may have getting out? You know, There's one specific problem I had getting out was a public assistance problem. I had trouble getting my food stamps back because of a correction they hadn't made in their computer, you know. But It took 3 to 4 months for me to get my food stamps when it should have been only maybe a month, you know, because all of us coming out need help, you know. And helping, getting jobs is not quite so easy, you know. It's they say they'll hire felons, but a lot of times they won't. It's just, I think by law they have to say that, but it's really hard to get a job. So I think just anything anybody can do to help. And like I said, the Hope Group has been really great. So it helps with families and people who are incarcerated.
Is that again at the Phoenix Center where that's held, or where is that held?
This meeting is held every Thursday night at 6:00 at Pulaski Heights Baptist Church.
Okay.
And it's well attended. There are 30, 40, maybe 50 people there. It's a great opportunity to meet and share, again, experience, strength, and hope of others that have been incarcerated.
They just have different resources to help you try to transition back into society. Uh-huh. It's a great group.
All right. Well, this is the audience is statewide that is listening to this, and some discussion about what's going on that you may know about across the state and how generally things are being dealt with. What's your assessment of the statewide ability to handle these folks coming out of prison?
I hear some of the groups that are out there trying to help around the state. Unfortunately, the latest numbers I've seen, there are about 10,000 people that come out of incarceration every year in the state of Arkansas. And there are a lot of groups that are trying to help. Some are not well equipped to do so, especially when you're dealing with drug and alcohol backgrounds. I happen to be in recovery myself, therefore I have been trained well to know how to do this. But I did look at the ACC list of transition homes recently. There were 17 statewide. Uh-huh. Not too long ago, there were 40-something. So that number is dwindling. And I think Linda mentioned that there's a tremendous need to have more transition homes, to have people to come to one location and be able to help. Linda, I think you may have been incarcerated more than once, and you can maybe contrast the difference between coming out to someone's home and coming out to a transition home or halfway house.
Yes, as I said before, when you get out on your own, you all you have is a little bit of money and a bus ticket, you know, and you're kind of thrown out to the wolves, it feels like. You know, it's just really, there's not any structure. You have to develop that all yourself. And what's really hard is the culture shock. You know, going from all that structure in prison to none, absolutely none. And you have to find out for yourself what to do and what not to do. It's very, very difficult. And like I said, I'm from Northwest Arkansas, and there is no halfway houses to parole out to in that area, which is where my family is from. So I paroled out to Little Rock, which I love where I'm at. You know, eventually I'll make it home to my family. But for the time being, I think there just needs to be more people willing to help us coming out, because it's just virtually impossible to be thrown out there without any help, without any support, you know. And I hope, you know, eventually to make it to Northwest Arkansas, maybe I can make a difference.
Right. At the legislature, there's been a lot of changes in the criminal justice system, and I know they were trying to increase the options on folks on parole, but what has the Department of Correction done anything to help ease the reentry, to address anything before they come out? I mean, things that are in place there, is there drug treatment for for example, or they do anything different than they've been doing for 10 years, 20
well,
years?
Well, I was at ACC, so we did have meetings. They were mandatory meetings. I don't know. They helped me, you know, up in there somewhere. I realized at a point that I wanted to change. I don't know, you know, when I got out, I came to the Phoenix Recovery, and going to those meetings, I know I don't want to go back to what I was doing. So there are meetings that they have in there, but the determination is really up to you once you get out.
We have another call. We have another caller on the line. Let's hear what they have to say. Hello. Hello, you're on the line.
Yes. Hello, I have...
Would you turn off your radio, please? You have to...
And she's gotten out before, and she's come home to us.
Ma'am?
It never went very well. Do you have any recommendations of what I could do or where might be a good place for her to go? Or how I could even go about finding a good situation for her that would be the most beneficial?
All right. Yeah. Could you hang up the phone? I think we're... Do you have your radio on? You need to turn your radio off. We're getting feedback. Okay.
As Paul said, we weren't exactly sure what we were hearing. I think you heard where are some options of where somebody could go coming out of incarceration. You could call me. We're going to give other phone numbers at the end of this show. Dale Sharp, 501-690-1380, and I can give you some options. I'd rather not discuss those options on the radio show, but I did this with a mom just today, and I can certainly do that. Dale Sharp.
All right. Again, thank you for calling. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. And hang in there. We've got more to come. You're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. We're back in Speak Up Arkansas, and we have another group of folks around the table to have this discussion for the remaining half hour. So would you all introduce yourself? Kim, we'll start with you.
My name is Kim Blackshire Lee. I am work for Phoenix Recovery Center. I am also the co-founder of I Too Have a Dream and one of the co-facilitators of the Hope Group.
All right. Yes,
Loretta. I'm Loretta Cochran. I am the chairperson of an organization called PERC, Personal Empowerment Recovery Coalition. We're a peer-run organization and focused on supplying support for peers in recovery and behavioral health. I also sit on the board of I Too Have a Dream.
I'm Zach Hudson. I'm a deacon at Pulaski Heights Baptist Church and one of the co-founders of the Hope Group.
All right. Well, let's go back. I was talking about the Department of Correction and asked the question about kind of their role or either good or bad or indifferent. And Kim, do you have any comments about that?
I think that the Arkansas Department of Corrections have made quite a few changes and in the structure. I think that more can be done, though. I get an opportunity that don't many get a chance to see, and those are those individuals coming home from incarceration. The day that they get out, the fear that they have coming off of that bus, especially a lot of them are from small towns, and they parole out to Little Rock, and they get to Little Rock, and they're scared straight. They don't know what to do, where to go, and they're looking for some direction at that particular time. And I just think if we could keep the ball, pick up the ball, keep the ball, and give them the support that they need, I believe that we'll have a lot more success with those individuals coming back home.
All right. Would you, Loretta, would you like to talk about your experiences with the groups that you're working with and what you've learned from all of this?
Well, my experience in behavioral health, and we know that's a factor in probably 75-80% of the individuals that are in our criminal justice system today, that plays a factor, plays a role. What I found is that typically forced treatment and very prescriptive methods are not as successful as individually driven opportunities. So what PERC has brought to Arkansas and continues to build in Arkansas are some tools that are very person-centered and person-driven. So instead of having someone tell you what your recovery and your health and your wellness should look like, we provide opportunities to help you learn how to define that for yourself and put together some proactive and preventative measures into your life so that from a standpoint of behavioral health, you don't sink to the point of being in crisis again or repeatedly. We're able to interrupt that cycle.
Okay. All right. Zach, how about you? What's your experience and what would you like to tell the listening audience about?
Well, my role with the Hope Group is to help facilitate the meetings. What we have strived to establish there is a unconditional support group for formerly incarcerated people. That is one place that in the rehabilitative process has been neglected in the past. There hasn't been anything established where you have a group of formerly incarcerated people helping other formerly incarcerated people face the obstacles they're presented with upon their release. As was stated earlier, a lot of times people feel like they were just handed a bus pass and a gate check and thrown out into the streets and told to succeed. We've tried to establish, and I think we've done a pretty good job of establishing a system that provides almost like a secondary family for people that may be relocated from another part in the state or just might not have their own family-based support network to return to, from prison to.
Well, I think that's it's peer, I think, is really important because it's always good to have somebody who's been through it anytime you're going through all of that. It occurs to me that it was mentioned that a lot of the folks are come from small towns and other parts of the state that end up coming to Little Rock. What kind of problems does that present for the people who are here away from their family, away from their community, and away from, at some level that may be good that they're away from what may have got them in trouble in the first place, but the real support at least is hopefully out there with your family and acquaintances that you've had. So what kind of how is that addressed, or how?
It's real important that that they get connected. That's one of the main things that we focus on at the Hope Group, is letting them know that they have the support, that they can call someone, they can talk to someone any given moment that they feel disconnected from their family and things like that, that they're able to pick up the phone, they're able to call one of us and connect with someone.
All right, all right. I want to remind listeners that you can call in at 501-433-0088 and ask any question, or if you're a former inmate, if this is something that you've experienced and want to share that, again, you can give us a call at 501-433-0088. You can also go online, and if you have a question, you can send it to speakupar@gmail.com, and it will appear here in the studio, and we can pass that question along to you. Does anybody else want to respond to the issue about family from out of the city? Or I'm curious to know, how does the negative stigma affect the confidence of the ex-offender, and how do you feel about the word ex-convict?
Wow, I think I was just talking about this yesterday to Dale. I myself cannot, I can't stand to hear the word, you know, because I think that puts individuals into a category and it automatically makes them feel less than, you know, ex-convict. Just sounds bad just hearing it. But you hear in the media, they use it to describe almost any returning person, anything that they're doing. We had a situation not too long ago where we were a group of individuals were out feeding the community and the homeless community, and it read ex-convicts feeding homeless people. And I mean, the idea, it took away from what they were actually trying to do. Mm-hmm. And it made some of the ladies like, well, why did they have to call us ex-convicts, you know? So it defeats the purpose of the things that they're trying to accomplish if they're labeled with the title ex-convict.
Right, right.
Well, stigma in behavioral health, for example, it's very similar. It's when you've got that label, you've put a diagnosis, or you've put a some way to categorize someone, and you're not looking at what they can do.
All right.
You look
hang
at where they've been.
Hang on a second. We have another caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. My name is Steady, and I would like to ask a question, if I may.
Please do.
I was formerly incarcerated for 9 months myself, and I consider myself a little more blessed than most when it comes to income, but I'm on a fixed income. And being doubly so, lower income, and being a felon, my problem is housing, affordable, decent housing.
Right.
And if you have any, if y'all might have some answers and help with that.
All right. Well, thank you. And if you'll listen off the phone, I'll see what they have to say.
Kim? All right, grateful. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
One of the things that the Hope Group does with those individuals that are a part of the group is they help them with I Too Have a Dream is actually the resource part of that group. And what I Too Have a Dream does is it helps individuals that come in there, they have housing issues, they may have employment issues, they may have health care issues, and all of those are addressed.
Caller, you're on the air. This is Speak Up Arkansas. Do you have a question or comment? Hello?
Yes.
I guess we lost her. I'm sorry to cut you off, Kim. Did you want to finish up?
There are several organizations in Central Arkansas that that we work closely with, that we partner with. One of the ones that Robert Combs mentioned when he introduced himself early is the Central Arkansas Reentry Coalition, which has a number of different organizations that work primarily with individuals that are returning home. We draw from those individuals and those individuals draw from us. But there's a lot of community work going on in the community to assist those individuals. But a lot of individuals come home and they don't know how to reach out to those organizations. They don't have a clue that there's a reentry directory that has a lot of organizations listed, phone numbers, and a guide to housing and things like that. But then also, we have a catch in that. A lot of those organizations, once they close down and things like that, they don't remove their names from the list. So we have a lot of organizations on the list that are no longer operating. So we need somewhere centrally located that those things can be updated. And that's what I2Have-A-Train tries to do, is make sure that the organizations that we're referring the individuals to are up and running. So
Right. That's an ongoing problem with the list of resources. But you brought up an interesting point, and that is, could you explain to our listeners what you think the community can do to help these individuals who are returning home as a community? What are some of the things?
Well, I think, for starters, have an open mind and not prejudge based on some preconceived idea. I mean, everyone that's coming out of the system back into the community, you know, they didn't get a life sentence. They served their sentence, and they're getting their next start. And I think that a lot of times we don't give that to individuals. We don't allow them that opportunity to start over. And I do want to say that I know that Kim Lee and D'Angelo Lee and Zach Hudson have not shared this, but they're a fountain of information. I have yet to have an individual who's had a challenge that have been in the criminal justice system that needed a resource that these three individuals haven't been able to source just due to their network. Uh-huh. And I think it's a wonderful thing that the Department of Corrections and Arkansas Community Corrections provides the opportunity for the HOPE group to meet. I believe, if I'm not wrong, that's the only one in the state, that's the only support group in the state that it's allowed to exist as a peer-run organization entity. And I think that is an honor and a level of respect that the Department of Corrections has given this group, recognized its good work, and I think it's to their credit that the state agency has allowed that to take a risk and allow this group to function and be so successful. So I think it's just a compliment to everyone who's made this thing successful.
Uh-huh. Zach?
Also, to address the question about housing that the caller asked, one, I believe that there's recently been some changes on public housing assistance for felons. I think Kim can probably provide better information on that than I could. But also, depending on where that caller was located, if they would like to show up to the HOPE group, we meet at 6:30 on Thursdays, 2200 Kavanaugh Boulevard, Pulaski Heights Baptist, room 323. We can help more if we can get hands-on with her or anyone else that's needing assistance to direct them towards housing or other assets we might have at our disposal. And also, as Loretta was saying, we've been blessed to be the first group of this kind that is approved by ACC and DCC to be felon-to-felon led. So we're completely approved, regardless whether somebody's still under parole or probation supervision, regardless of their felony status, they can show up and attend the meetings without it violating their probation or parole.
I want to remind listeners, you can give us a call at 501-433-0088, or you can email us and we will with a question or a comment, and that is at speakupar@gmail.com. Could you describe the recidivism rate and why you think it's so high here in Arkansas?
Recidivism rate right now, I believe, is what, 7 out of 10? And actually, there's been some legislation to address that. A lot of our recidivism is based on what's considered technical violations for parole. Possibly the person fails a drug test or something like that, and they are sent back to prison for that. obviously we're trying to provide life skills to keep those things from happening. The legislation from the Criminal Justice Task Force that's recently been formed and been working for the last year or so, they're trying to address it in finding an alternative method in dealing with technical violations so that the person isn't sent back into state custody to be reincarcerated. And I'm hoping if we as society and the legislation both approach this thing from different angles, we can probably get that down, because a lot of our recidivism rate is unnecessary.
Well, I think when you look at the support factors that are preventative in nature, in terms of secure housing, food security, employment, natural support, education, those things are are a challenge to come by in the state of Arkansas if you've been in the criminal justice system. And as we make progress towards having a safety net for individuals as they do come out and back into the community, your recidivism rate will go down. But the problem is we spend a lot of money keeping people locked up, mm-hmm. and we spend very little trying to help them stay out of the system again, because we feel you should just, you know, work harder, try harder, instead of addressing some of the roadblocks that folks have and some of the lack of skills. And I don't mean just technical skills, but also behavioral health skills, thinking skills, education, and also job skills. And we don't really systematically address those. We have some programs in the community. We have bits and pieces, but you've got to qualify and get in, and there's a lot of reasons to exclude, instead of taking each individual and say, what is it does this individual need to be able to be successful in the community? Well, we don't do that yet.
Go ahead, Kim.
That was something that, you know, me and Loretta have talked about on several occasions, is the providing the skills or providing the education that individuals need in order for them to get a job that will support their families. Because a lot of times we don't look at the fact that individuals get out, they tell them that they need to get employment, they get employed at a job paying minimum wage, and then they have to pay fines, court costs, probation or parole fees. And by the time they get finished with that, they can't support a family. So they turn back to what they have been doing in the past, and they end back up violating their probation or parole. And so they end back up going back to the Arkansas Department of Corrections. We need to properly prepare these individuals that are coming out. We need to give them skills that they need in order for them to get a job that will support not just the money that they have to pay in to the Arkansas Department of Corrections, but also to take care of their families and just their basic needs.
And I believe, if memory serves me correct, that while working in the system, you don't get minimum wage to go towards your fines and things. You're paid pennies on the dollar, which that doesn't help either.
Good afternoon, and you're on the air.
Yes, my name is Linda, and I've been incarcerated numerous times, and since my last release, I have become a part of the Hope Group and a part of Phoenix House, and it has been a great support system. It's very encouraging. There's an awesome fellowship there. And I would just like to say thank you.
Well, all right. They're here and they're smiling. They always like to be appreciated. Thank you for your call, ma'am.
You're welcome.
We got a question, and of course you were, I think, talking about that, Kim, but it says, what about that we can't get food stamps with delivery charge, and what's up with that? Anybody know about that? Go ahead.
Yes, sir. State of Arkansas, if you been tried or convicted of any type of drug charge, whether it be manufacturing or you could have been in a car with someone that's selling drugs, and you both get the same charge, even though the drug's not yours, it affects you as far as assistance once you return back into society. So the panel have discussed those issues, even some of the ladies that were here, about the challenges that they had to face once returning back into society over technicalities, a computer technicality that prevented her from obtaining assistance from the state. You know, Zach, Dale, Loretta, and Kim, as well as Jackie and Linda, they all hit on that topic. You know, it's coming home from prison, not having the proper resources. How do you expect for one to make it?
Right, right.
You know, it's just a matter of time. You know, we have a heck of a support system around us. You know, we do our best. I don't like the word try. We do our best to provide these individuals with everything it is that they need to make it in society. Uh-huh. One of our key things is, if you leave the whole group and you go back to prison, you'll be going back on the lie. Because it won't be that we not giving you everything that you need to make it and be successful out here. And one of our biggest goals is to empower those individuals, to get them the training that they need to create their own jobs. So they will be able to reach back in and grab an individual coming from back into society to give them the opportunity that they were given.
Right. That was D'Angelo Lee. He's in the room. We've got a room full of experts and only three mics. So we're sharing here. So that was a good comment and question to ask.
But it's also the reason that exists in both state and federal legislation is at one point in our war on drugs, we criminalized a behavioral health disease diagnosis of addiction and substance abuse, that we've now made a crime out of a medical condition, and that has fueled the ability to then limit those benefits because we've criminalized it. Uh-huh. So, and I'm not saying that there aren't bad things that happen when you're in addiction. I'm not hiding from that. But what I'm saying is that we've taken instead of a treatment view and a view of improving the health of, we've taken a punishment view of individuals that have the disease of addiction.
Right. They're everybody's calling it restorative justice is what we need, because once you've done your time, once you've made things right, then you need to be given the opportunities for a second chance. But of course, they always also need a rational first response mm-hmm. when they come in contact with the law. But that is important.
Also, I think it's fair to mention psychologically that takes a toll on a person. Just having that hanging over their head as a formerly incarcerated person myself, it is a little scary to think that if I fall into a period of unemployment, injury, whatever that may keep me from being able to provide for my family, we as a household are not eligible for any type of food assistance. So not only am I being punished, but my children would also fall under that category of not being able to receive proper assistance. And that's just one more piece of undue stress placed on a returning citizen's conscience that they have to face and deal with. And psychologically, it takes a toll and it wears a person down and kind of sets them up for failure.
Yeah. Okay, we've got just a little bit of time left, and I want to focus a little. I know you all have actually been talking about solutions. So I would like for one, think a minute about what would you like the listening audience most to understand about all of this? What is it that really you think is the biggest barrier, or what would do you say to those people who don't understand and who need to get over it? How do you deal with that? And while you're thinking about that, Kim, you want to give some telephone numbers or places that they might call? Or?
I do. Mr. Zach Hudson, phone number is area code 501-529-0729. That's for the Hope Group. D'Angelo Lee, area code 501-541-1282. You can contact him for resources with I Too Have a Dream. Mr. Dale Sharp, area code 501-690-1380. And you can contact him for information about the family support group that's held at the Willie Hinton Building. The first group of this year will be held on the 24th at 6 p.m.
Right. And again, this is also for the families of people who have family members in prison, mm-hmm. and because they need the support and help that and there are things they can do to help with that. Mm-hmm. So D'Angelo, you have something else you wanted to?
Yeah, to go along with what you said about to get the community involved, we invite you guys to come out to the support group that we have to get a feel on what we're doing. We invite you guys to come to the family support group meeting to put your input in. You know, as a new organization, we're looking for resources. We're looking for individuals to give us the support that we need, whether it be city leaders, politicians, the mayor, et cetera, you know, to get out to find out exactly what's going on. You know, to listen to some of these individuals that are returning back into society, some of the things that they're needing to make the transition from prison back into society. You know, if you haven't walked a mile in a man's shoe, how could you judge them?
Right. Okay.
You know, it's real amazing. I was talking to a family member about what they went through when their loved one was locked up, and you don't take into consideration what that family member is actually feeling when that person or loved one is taken into incarceration. Today I know, you know, today I know what that feels like. But I also know that there needs to be some type of support and some things put in place for those individuals as well. So we do have that support group. We also have that group. As D'Angelo said, we need the support of the community. This is not something that one organization can do by itself.
Okay, we have a question and a phone call. So let's see, the phone call stopped. Okay, the question was, what are the special circumstances that women face coming out of prison?
Hold on just one second.
Hi. Some of the, I would say special circumstances are wanting to get back with our children, wanting to get back with our families. That's probably the most important thing, is trying to repair some of the things that have happened with families. And mostly, all I hear is, I want to see my kids, I want to see my children, and that's what I hear mostly. And I think the biggest thing right now is the support we get at the Phoenix House is great. It takes some time. It just takes a little bit of time, but the women are mostly just wanting to get with their families and mostly want to see their children.
Anybody else want to add to that?
No, I think she said it well just then. You know, most of the things that I hear about is them wanting to get back to their families. A lot of them have lost that ability, though. Due to their incarceration, some of them have lost touch with their children. Other family members have their children, or their children are in foster care and they've lost their parental rights. And a mother wants that connection again. So
right.
That's one of the big ones for them.
So we're talking about, and I'm just trying to summarize folks' notions about what is it that you think is most important for our listeners to know about this issue and to help them understand better what's going.
Well, I think something that would benefit everyone is that if you have been in the criminal justice system, if you have been incarcerated, formerly incarcerated, and let's say you've been doing well for 5, 10, 15 years, you are vital to the Hope Group and to this community. We need to see you. We need to hear from you. We need your experience. We need to see where you've walked, because we've got folks that are trying to do this for the first time, and having that diversity in folks that are in the room, that are resources, they're those natural supports, they're family. So I think that, I know sometimes that it's easy to leave the past behind us, but in this case, your past is a huge asset, I think, to you and to the folks that are coming out today. And we have more folks coming out today than ever before.
Right.
And we really don't want them to go back.
Right.
I also think it's imperative that for the people that have never been involved in the criminal justice system, have never been incarcerated, never been arrested and in prison, that we start looking at returning citizens, formerly incarcerated people, a little differently. It's key that we realize our prison systems and our court systems were designed originally and intended to be a system of rehabilitation, not a system of punishment. So once that person has served their sentence, we're supposed to be allowing them to rehabilitate and improve themselves. We aren't supposed to be you know, isolating and mm-hmm. pushing them to the outskirts of society and continuing to push them out and not welcome them back in because they will never be able to fully rehabilitate without mm-hmm. acceptance from the rest of the world after right. they've completed right. their sentence.
The real sentence, that's a, it's an isolation and, right.
During okay. the time after you completed time.
Yep. He said something, though. I wanted to catch that when Zach said that. He said, returning citizen. And I love, me and D'Angelo talk about this all the time. An individual is not a citizen unless they have the right to vote. That's a whole nother program right there. I mean, they are returning individuals, they're returning persons, but not a citizen.
All right. Well, I want to thank all of you all for being here. It's been a great discussion. We've gotten calls. This is really important. Again, 3,000 men and women released to the community every year in Arkansas. We need to pay attention to them, and we need to close that recidivism rate down to zero. And thank you all very much, and keep up the good work. I'm so glad to hear of the success, and I hope the listeners were not only touched by this, but also can take some sort of action to either get involved or help someone else who is out there. So thank you very much for being here. Thank you very much, Kim and D'Angelo, for actually putting this all together, and for all of you all who took the time to be with us. You're listening to KABF Community Radio. Speak Up Arkansas. We'll be talking about education next week. So join us. Thank you and good night.
Whether your candidates won or lost during this year's election, we know big changes are on the way in 2017. Created Speak Up Arkansas, a new talk radio show to discuss the issues like health care, criminal justice, and the workers' economy, all that and more in our changing political climate. Starting Wednesday, January 4th at 5 p.m., Speak Up Arkansas will talk with Arkansans who closely monitor the Arkansas legislature and our congressional delegation. We want to make sure our elected officials are putting the needs of low and moderate income Arkansans at the top of their agenda. And mostly, we want to make you